Hello and welcome to the KO Knockout Podcast. Today we sit down with Jessica Marlin, counsel at Ropes & Gray's Asset Management Practice Group, who is not one to back down from a healthy debate. Jessica knew from an early age she wanted to become a corporate lawyer and has nurtured her passions for advocating and learning ever since. Join us as Jessica takes us through her journey and obstacles and shares how her curiosity and initiative have led her to where she is today.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the KO Weekly Knockout Podcast. We have a very special guest here today, Jess Marlin from Ropes & Gray. Jess, I want to welcome you to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lindsay.
Kicking off with something I love about your background, you don't mind getting into a debate or arguing. And I want to hear a little bit in this world where I feel like we're also polarized and I think some of us have trouble with healthy conflict. I want to hear from an early age, how did you get interested in healthy arguing and in debate? How did you first sort of discover that about yourself?
Well, I think I sort of always just had a passion about myself and advocating for different things. I liked learning about things and then talking about them and making a point and arguing. And I think, you know, I think policy debate, though, that I did in high school and college is so much more than that. And one of the most interesting aspects of it is just what you learn about so many issues and all sides of an issue, right? You're not just learning about your perspective, but you have to constantly learn about other people's perspectives and how to defend your perspective. And you're also on different sides of the argument many times. So you have to, you know, figure out all the flaws in your own argument as well. And I've always found that so interesting. So it's sort of this component of getting passionate about a topic and learning about it and learning about all the problems and all the issues, and then being able to turn around and actually advocate for it and make arguments and have people poke holes in it and come up with answers and solutions on your feet. I just have always found, and I just enjoy the process, right? I enjoy that sort of aspect of research and debate.
When you look back over your early years, was there ever an argument that you had to make that was a little wacky or that you really didn't agree with, but you had to put yourself in that position and think about the other side? Did you ever get on the other side of debate and have to, I don't know, muscle your way through it?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, there are many cases where, you know, maybe you had a debate partner in high school. So maybe they wanted to argue about something that you were less convinced of. Like I had a debate partner who wanted to argue about the value of ironic discourse. and you know, there's a whole line of songs and different pieces of publication that are ironic, you know, jokes about eating babies, right? Because it's so ridiculous and it like brings attention to an issue. There are songs about this, there are poems about this. It is interesting, but it was definitely not something that I was very convinced could be a tool to create change. But it was fun and it was nice to do something that my debate partner was interested in.
Did you have the same debate partner over a long period of time or did it change up a lot?
No, it changed up a lot. I think we were always pairing up or people were transferring schools or you were paired with someone more senior or more junior based on your levels and abilities. And that was always a fun experience because there were people who pulled you up and there were people who you pulled up. And that was a great tool for, I think, learning how to train and mentor other people and how to be mentored, right? I think I had a lot of great mentors in high school and college, and I think that made such a big difference in where I am today, just showing me all the possibilities for the future.
So did you know from an early age with some of your interests that you wanted to be a lawyer when you grew up?
Yes, yes. From a very early age, I knew I wanted to be a corporate lawyer. I remember in ninth grade, the teacher asking me, asking everyone, you know, what their future career was. And I said, oh, corporate lawyer. And she said, well, that's, chances are you're not going to end up being a corporate lawyer. No one ends up being what they actually say now. And I was like, oh, no, I think you're wrong. But okay, whatever you want. Here I am, corporate lawyer. So yeah, not surprising. I mean, I certainly, you know, explored other careers, whether it was politics or, you know, teaching, getting a PhD, business school for a moment, but I think I'm well suited to this profession.
So just to prove your teacher wrong, you decided I'll go ahead and apply to Harvard and get in early. And I'd love to hear how some of your teachers and colleagues reacted. They probably weren't that surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I had always done well in school. I don't think people were totally surprised when I got in and got in early. I was delighted. You know, I knew I fit, you know, the criteria, but obviously it's difficult to get in, and they only admit a small percentage of the applicants. And yes, I was very delighted to get in. I was very, very happy for that opportunity.
Amazing. And so tell me about your time in undergrad. You know, what were you like? What would your peers in Harvard have described you as at that time?
Curious and interesting and willing to take the lead on projects. I think I always worked well with, you know, older kids in my class and, you know, would often take the burden of the work on group projects, which was surprising. I thought at Harvard that everyone would want to take the lead, but that was not always the case. In certain classes it was, but in others it wasn't. And it was definitely, it was an interesting process, but I was always, yeah, curious and outspoken and, you know, like to be involved in activities, whether it was Harvard Political Review or I debated for 1 year in college, those things. I really enjoyed my time there.
Wonderful. So then you end up in law school, you're on your path. You always knew that you wanted to be a lawyer. You got married really young, right?
Right out of college. Yep.
So you end up in Madison going to law school. You have some ties there, such a beautiful area. And then tell me about the early part of your career. I mean, we graduated the same year from undergraduate in 2005. So, I was, in New York in finance, probably while you were in law school, and then you graduate and you come into a little bit of a wacky environment. Tell me about what was that like, the kind of first couple of years you entered the workforce.
Oh, that's right. I mean, even when I was interviewing for a summer associate position was when the financial crisis was happening. Lehman was falling. I mean, it was crazy in New York. It was literally actually crazy, like on the streets crazy at certain times. And it was scary because we didn't know if firms would be extending the same percentage of offers, if they would be, you know, doing callbacks, all of that. Thankfully, all of that was fine. I ended up as a summer associate at Ropes and Gray. And then there were all sorts of questions. So it was the largest summer class I'd ever had. And would they hire the full class? But they made a guarantee at the beginning. They said, you know, we anticipate hiring everyone from the summer class. So that was helpful. At least I knew I could get my start. And I had chosen Ropes and Gray because of the strength of their asset management practice. I knew that's what I wanted to do. I'd spent a summer at the Securities and Exchange Commission after my first year of law school. And so I knew that would be my area of focus. I knew I wanted to focus on private funds. And, but it was difficult at first. I mean, when I first started, we were deferred. We should have started in the fall of 2010, and it didn't start until January. And it was only a small number of people from my class. Many people had chosen to take nonprofit fellowships for a full year. So I started with a small class, and there wasn't a lot of work. I mean, and there were a lot of sharp elbows to get work. People want to make their hours, and they want to be involved, and they want to, you know, get a foothold. So things were different at first. And I think, you know, you did the work you were given. Thankfully, I got put on a very busy new client. And actually, I think it gave me this great opportunity to just delve into work. I had a lot of time to focus on this particular client, and they really liked me, and I worked well with them. And I think I got a lot of growth and opportunity out of it, even though it was a difficult time when things were less busy and, you know, work could be scarce at times. I was able to sort of get my foot in with this client. And it was, like I said, just a great opportunity to grow. I think I got to do things that other first years wouldn't, and first years, I think today don't. There's so much first year work now that, you know, that there's less opportunity, I think, for that growth when there's sort of different types of clients to work on.
That's interesting. So you think the role of the first year has changed over it's gotten more institutionalized over time?
Yeah, I think unfortunately that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, it depends. It depends on what client you get put on, right? And what opportunities you have. I happen to be on a new client where there weren't other people working on it. And so I think I got the opportunity to grow up a little bit more. Now, I think, you know, sometimes first years end up doing a lot of sub-doc review and, you know, just sort of helping out the team, pushing through side letters, things like that on big fun teams. And I think, you know, some of them get the opportunity to do other things, but I think it's harder in this environment. But there's work. There's plentiful work, and they don't have to worry about that. They don't have to worry about that. They don't have to work on vacation. They don't have to worry about, you know, they don't have to worry about their hours, right? And they only have to worry about too many hours. So, it goes both ways, honestly. And having plenty of work means that you get trained up very quickly, too. So I think there's a benefit to it for sure.
Yeah, we always said in investment banking, it's like 4 years crammed into two. So
because you're working the hour. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So maybe they grow up faster in that way. Right. That's totally true. I mean, I think the number of hours you spend is definitely, it can be a proxy for your experience level.
I remember last summer, so we're chatting right now in early 2022, but I was talking to some of your colleagues in law last summer, and they said, we just can't take on more work right now. I don't have enough hours in the day to do one more project. And has it just been gangbusters like that for you recently?
Yeah, actually, I think it started in February 2020. It was busy, like right before the pandemic, I was very busy. And then when it started, there was just so much that there's just been so much work. Our group has grown tremendously at Ropes and Gray. The asset management group has grown. And it's not for a lack of people. It's just more and more projects. Every client is busy. The fundraising cycles are shorter and faster. And, you know, everyone wants to get the next fund launch or the next deal done. It's not a bad problem to have, really. And I enjoy it. I don't know. I love being busy. Like I said, I think because I started and there was less work, I'm hungry for it. I love it. I think it's interesting. I love starting a new project with either new people or the same people that I love and, you know, just learning about something new. Like some of the deals I work on are like single asset recaps and, you know, you get to learn about like an industry or a specific company. And that's like completely different from, you know, what you may have ever seen before. And I don't know. I find that fascinating. And so I like the busyness. I mean, sometimes it's overwhelming, but I think generally it's a great training ground.
Tell us about your practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm counsel in the asset management group. And there's sort of two aspects to my work. So one aspect is that I represent sponsors of private funds. So, and for the most part, the strategies of those private funds are hedge funds, open-ended hedge funds, and private credit funds. So that's takes up a large portion of my time. And then another portion of my time is investor side representation. So I'll help investors in making investments. And those investments usually center around private credit fund investments they're making, usually through separately managed accounts, and also these single asset recap deals that I do as part of our secondaries group. So it's a varied practice, but it's pretty concentrated in those areas.
What's your favorite type of client to work with?
That's interesting. So I think my favorite clients are the clients that I know really well and in depth and really know their business, because I think that's where I can be most helpful. And you know, now it's interesting. A lot of my clients, the in-house counsel people, they're about my age. They have similar backgrounds, similar interests. And that's like such a nice environment to work in because you have things in common and it just lends itself to a really nice like tonal conversation. And like I said, when I know their internal clients, I know the type of risk they like to take on. I know, you know, just about their history. It's such a nice method to sort of help them do their job, right? And also I like them. So I want them to do great at their jobs. I want them to get promoted. I want them to do well internally. And so being able to help them do that is just such a nice, it's such a nice aspect of my job. And that's really what I see myself as, you know, my job is to give my clients the tools to do great at their jobs. And so that's what view my every day basically is helping them sort of do their best.
What's the biggest obstacle that you've faced recently? And I'm going to caveat that you've had a baby in the last year. You have another son who's sort of a 5-year-old toddler. So you have plenty of just life obstacles. Then you have the work. Then you have just being a human and trying to stay fit and healthy. Like, where are the biggest obstacles that you're facing right now? And maybe share one that you've overcome in the recent history.
Yeah, I know that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think the hardest thing for me has been trying to focus my practice, right? And figure out what I like about my job and where I want to grow the types of work that I do. And making sure that, you know, I'm having conversations with people at work about that and about the kind of work I want to do and about where I want to go and where I want my future to be. And I think, you know, trying to be thoughtful about that on a daily basis can be really challenging when there are many other things going on and many other things out there. And like you said, the pace of work is so crazy. Sometimes it's easy to lose sight of the things that are important and where you want things to go and how you want your practice to develop. So I think it's not hard for me. You know, anytime there's work, I'm like, oh, sure, I'll help. I'm always happy to help. I'm always a team player. But now I've had to be a little bit more thoughtful about where I spend my time because I want my practice to look a certain way. And I have to know that. And I also have to have internal advocates who can help me, you know, think about that. And so I think sort of finding the right people to work with and talk to has been, you know, a challenge, especially in this environment where, you know, you're not seeing people in person. And so you kind of have to seek them out, right? And have conversations and things like that. And that's been challenging, but also very rewarding. And I think there's the same thing with clients, right? Like establishing relationships with clients in this environment when, you know, you're not seeing people face to face is also challenging. And I've tried to work through that. More Zoom calls, more one-off calls, engaging with them in different ways, and then still trying to have the occasional client lunch, right? So that you can see people face-to-face. And then also sort of meeting, you know, little requests that come in and trying to accommodate clients in ways that show them that I want to be there for them in this environment, which is, again, challenging at times.
What's something that you're kind of nerding out about right now?
I'd say that the thing that I'm nerding out the most is over the last, I would say maybe year now, I've been reading my son the Harry Potter books. And I know a little bit later they get darker, but the first and the second, and now we're a little bit way through the third, have just been delightful. He's learned all the characters. We watched the movies as we worked through the book. And we've also started building the Legos. And that's just been, I don't know, a blast. And I didn't know anything about Harry Potter and I wasn't a Harry Potter fan before, but learning it with him has just been so interesting and fun. I love reading to him. I love reading through the stories and talking about them. And he gets all excited and he just like, he loves all the little details. He's very detail oriented. So he like just eats up all the details about them. And is always telling me things and reminding me about things from the books and integrating the books into his life and his drawings and his stories. And it's just like, it's so enjoyable. It's such a nice way to connect. Like, I don't find, like, my husband's really good at, I don't know, playing Paw Patrol with my son. Like, that's not me. I'm not going to do imaginary characters. And like, I don't know, I just don't have that, that it's not part of who I am. But this is like such a nice way to connect with him over something that's like detailed and smart and interesting. And I've just found that to be a really rewarding experience. And it's like not a huge time commitment either, right? Like we can read, you know, 15 minutes a night and still have this connection over this thing, or like spend an hour on a Lego set, you know, over a course of a few weeks. And that is actually a great connection tool, even though I don't have hours on it and to spend with him talking about it or thinking about it.
Wow. I love that. That is amazing. And fun too. Fun for both of you. And that shines through. I think when you're enjoying your time with your kids, they feel that and they love that. Really, really wonderful. Is there a mantra that guides you?
Yeah, I'd say, I think so. There's two that I really say to myself a lot. And the first one is make it count. And I don't mean make it count like, you know, live every day like it's your last day. Like, I thought it's not how I live my life. I think that is short-sighted, at least from my perspective. But I think making the moments that you have count. And I don't mean, that doesn't mean you never relax. And that doesn't mean that you have to always be doing something. But I think that, you know, if you have the opportunity to go to the gym, even if you can only go once a week, like, you really need to make that count. Like, don't grab those light weights, you grab those heavy weights, because, you know, or if you're going to grab the light ones, you better have a good reason. You better be thoughtful about it. Like, and whatever it is, even if it's work, right? It's an opportunity with a client. It's a project you get that you could do a great job on. Like, thinking about that and being thoughtful about making every little thing you do count and add up, I think it's important. And sure, I don't think about it all the time, and I forget about that sometimes, but I try to remind myself, because, you know, there, especially when I'm doing things that I have more limited time to do, I like to really get as much as I can out of it, because I don't have any regrets, right? I hate regrets, and I don't want to look back and wonder where all the time went. Absolutely. And then the other thing is stay the path, which is kind of part of the same thing with make it count. I mean, sometimes I just have to remind myself, even when other people get carried away with a certain worldview or way of treating people or way of looking at things, like, I have to remember who I am and how I do things and stay that path, because that's how I'm going to be the happiest. I try not to lose sight of that. And again, sometimes these things, you know, it's imperfect, and they don't always work, but for me, it's important. I mean, even as simple as, like, you know, when people get short over email and stop, like, addressing the other person or saying hi in their name, and just because they're, like, clearly in a bad mood, it's like, no, I say hi in someone's name, and I, you know, and that's how I am. And I'm not going to adopt someone else's style just because that's the, you know, the way they're interacting with me. I'm still just going to be myself. And at the end of the day, that will, at least for me, that will work better. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways that it plays in. It's not, like I said, it's imperfect, but I try to adopt that as much as I can.
Well, that answers a question I had, which was, are you a true New York, New Jerseyan yet, or do you still have some of your Midwestern roots? And you just answered it. You still have to say hi and be kind and warm in your emails. So you're not an official true New Yorker yet. I married a New Yorker, so I'm allowed to say that. I get a lot of texts that are just go, go, go. That's incredible. So you really know who you are, and wow, what an incredible career you're building. Such an inspiration for the next generation of women who are interested in law or finance. So that's great. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Lindsay. I really appreciate your time. This was a great conversation.
All right. Thanks, Jess. And thanks everyone for joining. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining this conversation with Jessica Marlin, who believes that staying in a constant state of learning is crucial for growth. She lives by the mantra, make it count, and emulates how important it is in life and career to live every day with intention. Thanks for listening.